Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. On this week's episode, we're breaking down the possible impact that Humira biosimilars will have on health policies across the United States. Come 2023, the United States will welcome at least 7 biosimilars referencing Humira to the market, catapulting the adalimumab market to the number one spot as the biosimilar space with the most competitive products referencing the same molecule. One of the biggest concerns regarding these launches is how providers, practices, and payers are going to adapt to ensure that patients have access to adalimumab biosimilars and that practices aren't overwhelmed trying to keep up with multiple versions of the same product. Today, I'm joined by Cronus Manolis, Senior Vice President of Pharmacy at UPMC Health Plan. He has a lot of experience working in the health plan space, especially regarding policy and relationships with pharmacy benefit managers, a rather contentious topic in present-day biosimilar discussions. Manolis is also a proponent of the idea that providers and payers could work together to promote biosimilar use and has been keeping an eye on the developing adalimumab space. Welcome to the show, Cronus. To start us off, what do you think is going to be the biggest factor influencing which adalimumab biosimilars will be the most successful when they come to the U.S. market next year?
So, certainly there'll be the typical factors like the regulatory and the legal and things like interchangeability. And then there's product specific issues such as for adalimumab, multiple disease specialties and indications and other nuances. But, this is the biggest drug in the world, so it will carry its own complexities. For example, drug rebate impact, specialty pharmacy financial impact, PBM contractual impact, to name a few. So, universally, there's a great divide in the industry as to the savings potential versus whether we will actually see the savings and when. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. But given how challenged pharmacy trends have been and really the pipeline that we're facing of transformative therapies, the industry has really no choice but to maximize the savings opportunity. So, in a perfect world, it shouldn't be this hard, but this is the biggest drug in the world. So all the stakeholders are kind of holding on a little bit.
Do you think that interchangeability designations will have a great impact on the uptake of adalimumab biosimilars? Why or why not?
Well, interchangeability is a nice to have, but we've already proven with currently available biosimilars that it's not a mandatory factor. I think in the case of adalimumab, it's the number of entrants that are going to come to the market, the timing of those entrants, whether they'll match the high concentration, et cetera, versus the aggressiveness of the innovator manufacturer. And I think that's what's going to drive savings and adoption.
Now, with the influx of adalimumab biosimilars coming down the pipeline, do you think that more health plans should voluntarily implement substitution programs to allow for patients to have easier access to biosimilars regardless of interchangeability designations?
So in 23, I think it's going to be a mixed bag due, again, to the timing of the products coming to market, any potential supply challenges, government formulary rules, et cetera. But for 2024 and beyond, I really see this as a pure biosimilar class. I think the wild card is, biosimilar to biosimilar switching. You don't hear a lot about that, but with so many manufacturers coming to market, that we don't have a lot of data. It's one thing to move from an innovator to a biosimilar, but we don't have a lot of data in the U.S. regarding biosimilar to biosimilar changes. So that has to play out, and we're all going to be need to be on board clinically. And so if there's challenges with this, then the robust pipeline of competition won't create the price competitiveness that we're looking for. And, we've got to work through it. But, I think the answer to your quest is, we're gonna move there. And we have no choice, as I said in my first bullet.
Besides all the Humira biosimilars, what other biosimilars are you most looking forward to seeing coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, ideally, you'd like future, my goal is to see the future biosimilars trace our drug spend. So our largest drug spend class, first and foremost, is the inflammatory class. And, Humira, a future Stelara, certainly will make a big impact in those classes, right? They're the number one driver of our pharmacy spend. And then there's oncology, specifically the immuno-oncology buckets. Then there, for our Medicare business, drugs for macular degeneration, retinal disorders, huge. And then, to round it out, neurologic conditions and then diabetes. And so I think that's where ideally you'd want to be able to convert large swaths of your spend to biosimilar competition.
Now, you were a co-author on a paper published in 2016 about how payers and providers could collaborate to encourage biosimilar use. Have you seen this relationship strengthen over time, and who should payers and providers be collaborating with next?
So I'm on record, for the last dozen years that says if we're going to be successful in biosimilar adoption, there has to be value for five key stakeholders. And there may be more, but when I think of the key stakeholders, I think of the patient, the payer, the provider, the specialty pharmacy, and pharma. Everybody's got a vested interest here. So, years ago, I did a national talk, and it was a dozen years ago, that highlighted what I thought at the time was going to be the biggest barrier to adoption, and that would be the clinical impact. And what we've been able to accomplish through increased provider collaboration at UPMC, I have the luxury of just being able to get an audience with any, specialty. We've really, the clinical barriers have been relatively non-existent. Instead, issues such as operational processes regarding infusions, within our hospitals, reimbursement, disease-specific nuances, they've all been the biggest areas of challenge. So again, any collaboration needs to ensure that there's value for all stakeholders. So if you ask the question about what would be next, pharma, specialty pharmacy, but it's always with an eye towards, are we serving the patient well? Are we serving the member well? What's in it for the member?
What are some strategies that health plans like UPMC Health Plan can adopt to encourage biosimilar use, especially in disease states that don't have as much experience with them?
I think the playbook is essentially the same, regardless, of whether the competition or the disease state, et cetera. Each disease class and corresponding set of specialists have their own unique characteristics that must be respected and reviewed and evaluated. And once you work through those, then we need to evaluate the things I mentioned before, like operational concerns, reimbursement concerns, logistics, member-specific concerns, et cetera. And then really monitor the progress and fine-tune any barriers. That is as critical as everything I've said before it. If you set out and you gain clinical consensus and you cover your tracks on reimbursement and you feel like all of the stakeholders have a value, an ROI, then it's not going to just pull through automatically. You've got to monitor progress, look for unintended consequences, and then continually fine-tune and improve upon any barriers that you find.
How can health plans work with PBMs to ensure that biosimilars are better prioritized on formulary lists?
Any strategies should be centered around value and alignment. PBMs often have significant financial revenue streams associated with innovator specialty products, including drug rebates. Most of the PBMs own their own specialty pharmacy, so there's revenue attached there. And then there's PBM contract language and revenues that can be impacted. And as often I often remind my organization, this is the biggest drug in the world. If we can't get adoption here, then we've wasted a major opportunity. And we really need to send the right message to the industry that we can do this because we are entering the golden era here of biosimilars, and we can't miss the opportunity.
And as someone who works for a health plan that accepts patients enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid, what do you think the government should be doing to ensure that prices within those plans decrease and biosimilars are better utilized?
Stakeholder alignment is even more critical in the regulated government markets. You know, first, I think from a regulatory perspective, we have to take out the low-hanging fruit. Things like patent thickets, pay for delay, et cetera, we need to take those out. And I think everybody readily acknowledges that. And that would benefit all lines of business, not just the government business. Then we need to address these very specific and unique operational requirements that are inherent with the government business. And what I mean by that is there's specific formulary management rules, when you can make a mid-year benefit change, et cetera. You know, these rules are more structured, more pronounced in the government business, and they add unnecessary complexity. And so, for example, a drug like adalimumab that will present a number of biosimilars throughout 23, we need the benefit flexibility to be able to make changes on the fly. Usually in Part D, that doesn't exist. What you kind of go out with, you're kind of locked into unless you go through this very regimented process. And I just think for our members, especially in government programs where subsidies aren't available, et cetera, we need flexibility to get the savings to the people that need it. So working together with government agencies to prepare for these significant patent events will benefit all stakeholders and ensure max adoption. And given the cost of these agents, and again, the lack of copay subsidy in Medicare Part D through coupons and other tactics, tools that are available in the commercial markets, it'll be critical that we work together so that our members can benefit from this competitive environment.
Cronus, thank you for sharing your insights with all of us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.